saving the world at $11 an hour. We are the SpyFi Guys, and this is Chuck. Hello and welcome back to the SpyFi Guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And today we are back with our rerun summer. We've been covering pilots and specific episodes from various TV shows from days gone by. And today we are covering 2007's Chuck, starring Zachary Levi and Yvonne Strahovski and Adam Baldwin.
And to join us today to help us with this coverage, we have my wife, Carolyn.
Hello.
Welcome back, Carolyn.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
I'm trying to remember. You didn't watch this. Did you watch this as it aired? Or you watched it later on?
Yeah, I watched it later on after it was already fully out.
All right. And Zach, have you ever seen Chuck?
I have never seen it. I was vaguely familiar with it because of the people in it. And I know that I know that audience members generally like it, but I really came in with no expectations at all.
Gotcha. So I'm the one who I saw it first run, like when it aired for the first time. And like as if the whole run was coming out, basically, I saw it all. So I was a fan of the show. But why don't we get to it? So we're going to be covering the pilot episode and another episode from the first season. So Zach, if you want to start us off with the IMDb plot synopsis for the pilot.
So the pilot is just named Pilot, not Chuck versus something, unlike the rest of them.
I think retroactively they called it Chuck versus the Intersect.
Okay. Yeah. The summary is, while computer nerd Chuck is forced to his birthday party, his old roomie at Stanford does spy stuff and sends Chuck an email that changes him forever. CIA sends agents to find him, and he has his first date in years.
Sounds pretty good. So we start off with what sounds like a secret operation going on. We see like close-ups of zippers and flashlights. It's all like filmed in sort of film noir style. But in reality, it's just Chuck and Morgan and his best friend Morgan sneaking out of his own birthday party.
Why is he sneaking out of his own birthday party, you ask?
Well, apparently it's because it's none of his friends are really there. It's all of his sister Ellie's friend, who's a very successful doctor. So he's trying to sneak out, but she catches both of them and says, nope, you can't leave your own birthday party.
Okay, why does he not have friends at his birthday party?
Because his sister is trying to set him up with someone so that he will stop being down in the dumps about Jill.
No, I understand that, but why doesn't he have friends at his birthday party?
Yeah, he's been depressed for the last 5 years, so I don't think he has that many friends.
Other than Morgan?
But he does.
Does he, though?
And then he's got coworkers, but they're not.
Yeah, I would not call Jeff and Lester friends.
No. Okay, well, I'm going to have a lot to say about this.
Oh, boy.
Hold my fire until the moment.
All right. So Ellie forces Chuck back to the party. This is where we meet her boyfriend or fiance? Boyfriend at this time?
Fiance.
Captain Awesome, a.k.a. Devin. So Chuck is introduced to all these girls. They start asking him all these questions. And one of them apparently knew someone who went to Stanford like he did and knew someone named Bryce Larkin.
Okay, so a couple things here. I like how the women are very well portrayed, okay? They're not super vapid. Like, I've noticed that in TV, there's women that people are trying to set our hero up with. They often are like, oh my God, can you believe what she said about the thing? And they're playing with their phones. So that's not how they're depicted. They really are nice, and they're interested in Chuck, and they, like, hang on his every word, which leads me to my issue with his characterization. Like, listen, I went in with an open mind, okay? Yeah. I really did. But this show reminds me of The Big Bang Theory, which actually came out It came out the same year, 2007, okay? And they both involved depictions of nerds on television. And as a nerd who is not on television, this cuts very closely to my heart.
Now,
I thought that people have a problem with the depiction of nerds in The Big Bang Theory, but compared to Chuck, they are much more realistic.
Oh, hell no.
In the sense that that's the way nerds actually act.
No.
Well, so Chuck, in the rest of the episode, and we're talking more about this later, is very charming. He's very attractive. He dresses well. He has great hair. He's tall. He's in shape.
I mean, you know, pass off the in shape one. And I mean, I would say that those apply to me.
Yeah, and look at you. You're married with a kid on the way, unlike Chuck.
But there was a time in my life where I was very much like Chuck. I was living at home. I was working at a retail shop. I had a bad breakup. And yeah, I very much related to Chuck at that point in my life.
And if your sister had said, here's a bunch of hot women for you to talk to, how would you have reacted?
I would have no idea how to react to it.
Well, Chuck's reaction is quite interesting, where he's fine until they bring up the ex-girlfriend. And then it goes off the rails. Well, he seems okay. Well, just remember this conversation.
Okay.
We'll talk more about it later.
The problem is that he goes, like, whatever reference, you know, Stanford reference or whatever, it reminds him of Jill, and he goes straight to talking about his ex. And even if he has all these charming qualities, if all you talk about is your ex, they're going to lose interest real quick.
Well, and that's exactly what happens, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems realistic, I would say.
There's also a part where he has these bandages on his fingers from presumably playing Call of Duty for hours and hours and hours.
Mm-hmm. And?
I'm just saying, if he were 300 pounds and had a sweatshirt with an anime girl on it, I would have bought more that he was in.
Yeah,
there.
Except here's the thing, though. The actor Zachary Levi, as well as Morgan, those, you know, their personas and being and how nerdy they are is pretty much how they are in real life. So that just because he may be tall and attractive doesn't mean he can't be a nerd.
Well, just because you're a nerd doesn't mean you can't be charming. Like, look at me, for example.
True.
Well, also, Morgan is also closer to the Big Bang guys. Mm-hmm. So him I completely bought as a nerd, especially his height.
That's an interesting perspective, Zach. Uh-huh.
Thank you. That's what I do here.
Yeah, like we said, one of the women brings up Bryce, and we smash cut to Bryce in like an all white room. I was reminded of the vault from the first Mission Impossible, the clean room, which has a single computer in it, just like that room from Mission Impossible. Except this one's a very old Mac. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember what specific model it was.
Well, this scene is very clearly influenced by The Matrix.
A bit.
Which in 2007 would still be pretty new.
Okay, which part of The Matrix?
So the room reminds me of the scene where they say, we need guns, lots of guns, and the guns come at them. Yeah. And then the old computer, they just use the old computer as a lot in The Matrix.
Anyway, so Bryce is downloading a file, and then all of a sudden all these images start being projected on the walls as he's downloading the file. Bryce put on sunglasses before he started downloading the file.
Also like The Matrix, they wear sunglasses in The Matrix.
So back at the party, Chuck is telling the story of Jill, his ex, and he kind of starts bumming out all the women. Mm-hmm. And we find out here that apparently Bryce also got together with Jill. So, you know, stabbed him in the back that way.
Did he, though? This is a very important thing. I would like to pause on this. All right. So maybe I wasn't paying attention, but the way I read it was Chuck dropped his books or something. She helped him pick it up. Yeah. And then he, like, followed her home. And then Bryce... moved in.
I mean, we have the knowledge of having watched more seasons of it, but there's a large gap in between that, those two parts of the story.
Okay, my question is, did Chuck and Jill actually date or not?
Yeah.
They did.
They did date. They were in a relationship for a while. And then, yeah, at some point, Bryce betrayed him, and then also Bryce got together with Jill.
Okay.
Well, he got him kicked out of Stanford, too.
Well, yes, that gets revealed in the next episode and not explained how, though, which is actually good. I like dangling plot threads.
Yep. So we go back to Bryce. He's blowing up the computer. There's a large explosion and the whole room blows up and he fights his way out of. I think we find out that this is DNI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
It's the Directorate of National
Directorate, thank you.
It's very important. I'll talk about it more later. So this includes wall running and parkour, also very popular in 2007.
His fights looked pretty good. They looked energetic, and they were easy to be, identified what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like you said, there's running, there's parkour. This is where I did get some, like, Matrix vibes, because he's, like, running and jumping across the rooftops like Trinity in the beginning of The Matrix.
Yep.
And then he looks like he's about to get away, but then he gets shot by John Casey, played by one Adam Baldwin.
So I saw Adam Baldwin at a local convention recently, and by recently I mean like a week ago, and he's still scary.
Does he look the same?
he looked tanner.
Okay.
He looked, his skin looked darker. I don't know if that means he's older or what, but he's still scary.
Okay.
He's still in shape.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so as he's dying, Bryce sends an email to Chuck. And after the party, Chuck and Ellie are talking. Jill. Ellie points out that, you know, no matter how much they ask, no one really wants to hear about the ex-girlfriend.
Which you'd think that would have come up at some point if he's been pining over her for 5 years, but okay. It's a TV show, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's not the first time that they've talked about that. And I think they make a point of that, that, you know, we have to have this conversation again. Please mm-hmm. don't talk about your exes.
Yeah, some yeah. awkward exposition.
I mean, I like the way they did that. Like, you know, I think he even says, well, we've rehearsed it enough times. So, like, it, you know, shows that this isn't a recurring thing. And he just keeps bumming out women because he talks about Jill.
Right.
So Chuck and Morgan are playing video games in Chuck's room. And they see the email from Bryce. And to open the email, he has to basically play a text-based video game called Zork.
Right.
So
did he invent it or did he modify it? I wasn't sure.
What the line was that he programmed their own version of it on.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, a TI something. I was like, that sounds like a graphing calculator, but I don't think so.
So you know what I appreciate about this?
Yeah.
And I don't know about this part specifically, but it's a nice reminder that there are people who look like Matt Bomer, who are really successful, who are really nice. Everyone likes them and super nerdy. So yeah, there are right? people who can have it all. They're just not you.
There you go. See, I mean, you had a problem with Chuck being a nerd, but you have zero problem with Bryce being a nerd.
I'm fine with Chuck being a nerd. It's just there's some discontinuities. He's very much a Hollywood nerd. Okay. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Shia LaBeouf in the Transformer movies. Maybe that's a bad example.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, here's the thing, I don't think Chuck being a nerd is never portrayed as a negative thing, which I appreciated about the show.
Except that he can't get a date.
That is never attributed to his nerdiness. That's more attributed to the fact that he's hung up on Jill.
That's true. That's a good point.
As he opens email, he sees a bunch of random images. I'm trying to remember, like, I remember it was photos of airplanes, birds, a lot of random stuff. And Chuck watches them all night when it's like a fast motion of like all of the images together.
Time lapse photography. And yeah. Also around here, we see that McGee or McGee is yes. the executive producer and the director.
Mm-hmm.
He, of course, did the X-Files, among many other things.
Yeah, including the 2000s Charlie's Angels movies. Morgan finds him in the morning where his brain is sort of fried. And Chuck goes to take a shower, and he's triggered by something. Like, he has a weird reaction to when he hears something about traffic.
Yeah, and he knows things he shouldn't know, like the police are in some kind of crazy formation.
The cops are in a phased deployment, and he's like, wait, what the heck does that mean? So we find that they work at the Buy More, which is a knockoff of a Best Buy.
Yes.
With green shirts instead of blue shirts, with a nerd herd instead of a geek squad.
I liked Buy More, though, because it feels like a corporate satire, a la The Boys.
Yeah. Yep.
I also think it's fun how they get a company car to take home with them.
Mm-hmm. I never thought about it, but yeah. Chuck is in charge of the nerd herd, and he's briefing everyone in the nerd herd about the latest virus that has been striking computers, the Irene Dimova virus. Apparently, Irene Dimova is a Serbian porn star, and if you go to her website, a virus will hit it and it will kill your computer.
Yeah, I like the use of a prop computer that they could have ready to destroy it, just to demonstrate what they're saying.
Yep.
But again, Chuck is very comfortable talking to people, including mm-hmm. girl employees. Everyone likes him, everyone except for that one guy. We'll talk about him later. So
I don't see why you're harping on this.
It's because the nerds I know would not be comfortable with this, with that kind of role. Basically, any
you
kind of talking
me?
To people. Yeah, that's fair. It's like an extreme.
I mean, no, I'm going to fight back harder on this. I know, we know a lot of the same nerds. And I will say, there are some who maybe, you know, may play into that stereotype. There are others who are much very charismatic people who can definitely be in front of a crowd. Hey, look at us. We can be in front of a crowd at AwesomeCon doing a panel. We can do this. It's really not that.
I misheard you. I thought you said we can pee in front of a crowd.
I heard that, Christian. Yeah.
All right. We can be in front of a crowd. B, letter B. Bravo.
That's a whole nother level.
I think my issue was I was expecting a Flanderized character where because they say he's a nerd and he has bandages from playing Call of Duty.
So you're complaining that we have a real person.
It's more of a balanced character. That's true.
Yes.
It's not a complaint.
It's something we should have, you would think, not just a bad stereotype.
I was feeling a disconnect and you guys were helping me out.
All right. So yeah, so as he's briefing the team, he notices something on the TV about a general who's in town and like zones out and he says, wait, the general's already here. He landed last night. Even though the news report says he's arriving today.
Mm. How did he know?
Back at the Directorate of National Intelligence in D.C., the NSA director and the CIA director are there with Casey. He finds out that this whole project, the computer and the room, is known as the Intersect. And after 9/11, CIA and NSA were told to play nice with each other, and all of their intel went to that computer.
Wow. What a great decision. It's not like someone can steal it.
Well, it's supposed to be unstealable, but of course, anytime you say something is that, someone's going to try.
Mm-hmm.
So Casey says that they picked up a trace on the email in LA, so he's going to go investigate that.
I feel like every show has something like that, like whatever, like crime or police show, there's always like a magic database where they're like, oh, I'm wondering about this thing. And they like type in a few letters and they like have access to like all
this
the
is intelligence very true.
Of the entire world, it seems like. I'm like, I'm pretty sure these databases don't usually talk to each other.
So. Certainly in Mission Impossible, they like having those MacGuffins. Like, here's a list of all the agents, or here's a list of all our info, or and so on.
We go back to the Bymore. There is a blonde woman who's coming into the store. Chuck is distracted on the phone. Morgan is trying to get his attention by saying, Vicky Vale, Vicky Vale.
Is that a real person? I don't know who that is.
From Batman.
Oh.
Yes, it's a reference to one of Batman's lesser known love interests.
Excellent.
Yeah, played by Kim Basinger in the Batman 1989 movie. So this is Sarah, played by Yvonne Strahovski. So she says she needs help with her cell phone. Chuck helps her out, fixes the, I think it's a battery issue, very easily. And as they're talking and kind of vibing, a man comes in needing extreme help. And so he's helping the man out with like recording his daughter ballerina doing her performance on a giant video wall, and he's trying to go back to see Sarah when he's stopped by Harry Tang, who's one of the green shirts, aka the work the floor, they do retail, not nerd herd stuff.
Okay, so Chuck is really charming with everybody again. He's good with kids. He can talk to this woman who looks like a supermodel, no problem. Yeah, why hasn't he had a date in 5 years?
Because he's hung up on his ex.
Well, that's absurd.
Okay.
It's just absurd.
Have you ever had a bad breakup?
Yeah, I have. It didn't take me 5 years to get over it. I still talk to people.
Okay. All right. But yeah, so he stopped by Harry Tang, who we find out Harry is his Bymore nemesis, and he's very strict on rules, and he wants to apply for the assistant manager position, which Chuck didn't even know was open, and is now considering it. Also, we find that Sarah left her number for Chuck. And Chuck is hesitant to call her. Morgan comes back to his place because he needs to use Chuck's computer because Morgan broke his computer looking up Irene Dimova.
Which is pretty funny. That's like an Archer move to use your buddy's computer and then intentionally destroy it.
I hope that Morgan's not using Chuck's computer to look up Irene Dimova again. I think he's just using it because he needs to check his emails and stuff.
Right.
Anyway, so as they get home, they find a thief stealing Chuck's computer, dressed in all black, and they have a fight. It's pretty funny. They are both, Chuck and Morgan are both pretty inept at fighting, and I think it caused more damage to each other than the assailant.
Yeah, there's really good slapstick comedy here, and Morgan goes to battle for his friend, which is pretty impressive.
Until he says, he's not that good a friend, and then gets knocked down.
Well, I mean, come on. This is funny, though, because Morgan doesn't come off that well, I didn't feel, in this first half of the episode.
But in the process of the fight, the computer gets broken, the thief leaves in their car, and we find out it's actually Sarah.
Okay, I'm not trying to be difficult. I went in with an open mind. I'm sorry. I just have a very powerful brain that always is thinking. And my thought here is what? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's the middle of the day.
Is
when
it?
She goes to find him.
Yeah.
Right? She mm-hmm. leaves your card, and then they come home at the end of the day, and she's breaking into his house right at that moment? Why did it take her so long?
I mean, presumably she needed wanted cover of night if she's going in a whole black outfit. If you do that during the middle of the day, would look more than a little suspicious.
But then you're more likely to encounter the person inside.
Eh.
Which is exactly what happens. Well, actually, in one of my old neighborhoods, they talked about how break-ins were more common during the day because they know people are at work. Obviously, this was pre-COVID.
Right, yeah.
Whereas if you break in the middle of the night, you know someone's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
It's not like where he lives is a secret. Like, Sarah would have been able to find it. It's just kind of dumb writing that they needed him to be there when she was there. So they had her, like, cool her heels for 5 hours or something, waiting for him to get off work, and then go break into his house.
She had other things to do, I'm sure.
Like setting up her apartment and everything else.
Oh my gosh. As Christian would say, did she though?
She had to go buy a ninja outfit. I don't know.
Back at the Bymore, Jeff and Lester, two of the other nerd herders who become much more prominent later in the series, are looking at Chuck's computer. They say it's fried. Chuck says he's going to go to Large Mart next door to buy some new locks.
This made me very happy. It's very clearly Costco.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
They got the hallway signs. It brought a little joy to my heart.
Yep. So as he gets in there, he has another sort of like, you know, zone out. And when he sees a guy there, and which we're just going to, he calls them flashes later on. And I'm going to start calling them flashes just for ease of, you know, terminology. So he flashes on that guy. And there's images, he sees images in his brain of the guy in the Large Mart killing other people, which of course freaks Chuck out. And he starts to think that he's going to try to kill him, tries to run, but gets trapped by like a bunch of carts that are being pushed away.
They were forklifts, which is even funnier. There's like 7 forklifts all driving super fast in a row.
Yeah. And he like goes to find someone for help and was like, he describes the guy's like, you mean that guy there? And he's the very calmly talking to one of the checkout people. And I love this scene here where like as soon as he like talks to the the Large Mart employee, like all the people suddenly come back out of the aisles. It's not no longer deserted. Now it looks like it's just a normal Large Mart or Costco.
It reminded me of something by like Hitchcock, which is a big praise for this show. And then the guy seems normal, but then you see a gun at his belt.
Back at Bymore, Chuck is at his post. He's got his head down. He's like, I'm losing my mind. And Sarah comes up to him. She reveals that she just moved there and, you know, asks, you know, I don't really know anyone here, so maybe you could help me show me around.
It's what they call a hard sell.
Yeah, Morgan very quickly agrees for him, says his schedule is wide open. So we see Sarah leave the Bymore, and we see Casey watching her from a car.
Yeah, he's coming in. I think someone says the NSA is stepping in and they're sending him.
So Chuck goes back home, reveals he has a date to Ellie and Awesome. We have a montage of both Chuck and Sarah getting ready. There's a big contrast because, like, you know, Sarah is hiding weapons and putting on a bulletproof vest while Chuck is making funny faces in the mirror.
We also have gratuitous underwear shots of Yvonne.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Ellie gives Chuck some flowers to give to Sarah. And as this is happening, Sarah calls her boss, who says, kill him if he runs.
Yeah, so a couple of things here. Like, should I start bringing flowers on dates? Is that something people do? Because it seems like something people only do in the movies.
I've done it.
Just for first dates?
It's like an extra nice thing. You don't have to do it, but it's like next level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Morgan is also creepy in this part.
Oh?
Yeah, that's the note.
Which part?
Okay, so like, later on, they talk about how Morgan is in love with
yes.
Yeah.
In this episode, it's more like in lust. Like, he's really creeping on her.
Yeah, yep.
Well, you can tell that Ellie doesn't like that.
They go to a Mexican place for their date. Chuck tells Sarah about Captain Awesome. Sarah, you know, reveals that she's just not funny, apparently. And Chuck is just, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong with you. You know, you're attractive, smart, and, you know, yeah, so apparently just not funny.
And Chuck is so charming. He's so great in this part. She's laughing. He's really connecting with her. They're having a great time. And don't tell me she's faking it. Because she says that she's so into him. All right? So he's really doing great. And I totally am not buying this whole thing that he's just
infatuated. Or are you jealous?
Yeah, it's obvious. Yeah, I'll admit it. I don't care.
He could have been Bill Gates. I think they say that at one point.
That, oh, yeah, that know, Chuck could have.
Stanford, he was on a track.
What a relatable protagonist.
Well, it's relatable, but it's also aspirational.
For a character, you want them to have skills, but also flaws. And he obviously does have flaws. That's how you have a relatable character. Mm-hmm. So it totally works.
Yeah, Sarah just came out of a long relationship. And she asked Chuck, you know, about you, any, you know, women in your past? And he says, yes. And he tries not to bring up Jill. And then he makes a joke that I don't think would work today, the restraining order joke.
Yeah, that was a little cringe.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I don't think it works today.
He's the target of the joke, not her.
Still.
That's why it works.
I don't know.
But still, you don't want from a guy.
Yeah.
You got to know your audience. That's fair.
Yeah. So Chuck brings Sarah to a music venue. On the way there, he flashes on a motorcade. And Casey spots him as they're walking, tells his agents that Chuck has to be taken alive, but they can kill Sarah.
Yep.
So inside, they're listening to the music. Sarah spots the NSA agent and brings Chuck to the dance floor. And she, like, takes out the NSA agents as she's dancing, with Chuck having no idea that that's happening.
Very sexy. Yeah, look at this Chuck. He knows all the cool bars. He knows all the cool bands. He doesn't like any weird music, like Irish music, for example.
Yeah, how does he know this bar scene? Maybe Ellie told him where to go.
That's what I'm feeling like. It's more than likely that Ellie and Awesome told him where to take her.
Ooh, yeah, are we doing fan theories? I like it.
Sarah brings him outside and tells Chuck to get in the car. She breaks into the car and hotwires it. They have a chase with a nerd herder car going backwards.
I did like that he drove his company car on a date to a bar. That is very funny. Mm-hmm. So I actually wanted to jump in something that we skipped, which is there's a part where she said that her ex was named Bruce, which obviously is Bryce, with a slight change. And then they talk about his name, like Chuck makes fun of the name Bruce. She makes fun of the name Chuck.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking, like, why does he go by Chuck? Why doesn't he go by Charles or Charlie?
I assume it's like a childhood nickname that he just...
What his parents called him.
Yeah.
So you know how people have names that, like, they totally fit? Like, you can't imagine them with any other name?
Sure.
I do not feel that way about Chuck. He doesn't seem like a Chuck to me.
Okay. Anyway, so they have this big car chase, and I like it. The action's here is pretty good. Like, she's driving the nerd herder backwards, and they drive it backwards down some stairs... kind of destroy the car.
Yeah, it's a real night and day vibe. I don't remember whether Chuck does any screaming, but I feel like he does.
I'm sure he has a few girlish screams.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah tells Chuck that the NSA are trying to kill him, and he's very confused why. And as they're talking about it, Casey smashes into them with a giant SUV.
Mm-hmm. This is good action.
Mm-hmm. They get out of the car, they're trying to get away, and they're about to ram into Sarah when she crashes their car with the emergency barricades that she activates from a parking lot.
So I didn't even look this up for fact versus fiction.
Oh, there's no way they move that fast.
Yeah, come on. Actually, if this show had a higher budget, they could have had it go slower, then it like launches the car in the air. That would have been cool. I feel like that was in some movie, but I don't know which one.
I'm sure it was. Sarah requests an emergency air evac. She asks Chuck what he knows about Bryce, and they're on top of a rooftop. He's surprised to find out that Bryce was a spy. Talks about the email and the pictures, and that there's no backup. There was no external drive. It was so everything was what he saw. So Casey gets up there. It's a Mexican standoff. Sarah tells Chuck not to freak out.
Yeah, I like that there was a power struggle between the two agencies here. That was a cool development.
So Chuck flashes on, what does he flash? Oh, the hotel. He like looks over the edge and sees the hotel, and all the intel about the General Stanfield flows into his head. So he says that, you know, someone's going to try to kill General Stanfield. He relays that, okay, the CIA intercepted one part of a plan. I think it was a hotel schematics. And the NSA intercepted the other part, which was like plans for a bomb. And they all got synthesized and put into his head. And so now all of their secrets are in his head.
Yeah, so I like how that comes back to where the intersect, like the intersect's origins. But mm-hmm. that being said, I felt like if he really knows all that stuff, they should just kill him.
Yes, but all of the intel that they had is in him now, and they want all of that intel.
No. Excuse me. They said the two agencies share their information. There's no backups. Mm-hmm. There's got to be.
Apparently, that's it's all of the... Yeah.
They're saying they don't know anything. The only thing they know is in Chuck's head. That's hilarious.
Yeah. I've never actually thought about it, whether there's other, like, whether or not all of it exists elsewhere or not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure when they merge the two, there's like synergy and you get like a next level.
Yeah. Like all the stuff, like analysis. Exactly what's going on in Chuck's head, where he can synthesize it and combine it to make it actual. Yeah.
Well, the human brain acts as a computer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the money they spent on the project,
this
too.
This is true. Probably. Yeah, that's important. All that money.
All the sunk cost, yeah.
Yep. So Sarah asks if there's time to defuse a bomb. She reveals that Bryce is dead and that he died sending that email.
Okay, this really confused me.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I don't get it. And maybe they explain it later. So Sarah says, Bryce died sending those secrets to you. But
yep.
Casey killed him.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand why all these information needed to get out.
We'll find out later.
Ugh, I knew you were going to say that. It better be a darn good explanation, though.
You'll just have to watch more episodes.
Mm-hmm. They go to try to rescue the general. He's already on the stage. The Serbian bomb maker from before, the one who he saw in the large mart, has wheeled out a serving tray with the bomb in it. They find the bomb. There's no time to evacuate, and they can't disconnect the computer.
Yeah, it's a really fancy bomb where the computer like comes up out of the ground or whatever, mm-hmm. out of the case, and it has a big digital countdown.
So as this is going on, he gets a call from Morgan, who's mentions the Irene Dimova virus, when Chuck gets an idea. Connects the computer to the internet, looks up Irene Dimova, gets the virus on the computer, which kills the computer and defuses the bomb.
Okay, so I'm really not trying to be difficult.
Are you, though?
This part made me roll my eyes so hard. All right? So
first
of
all, innovative.
Yes, it is innovative, Carolyn. Mm-hmm. You're correct. First of all, why is the computer even hooked up to the internet?
He has to activate that. That's what he goes into the DOS back door to actually connect it to the
internet. Yeah, he said he was familiar with this model of computer, so he was able to do behind-the-scenes stuff with his nerd herd skills.
Mm-hmm. That's right, why he says, you know, Mr. Bomb, meet Mr. Internet. So he connects it to the internet.
All right, I'm going to skip to the end and said that I found it really, I can't think of the adjective. It just made me roll my eyes that his geek knowledge saves the day while these two top field agents just stand there with their thumbs up their butts watching him do it. It makes them look really dumb. And the thing is, he's been useful up to this point. Like, he shows them where it is. He shows them how to go. So if Sarah had stepped in and disarmed the bomb, I really don't think it would have hurt the show that much. And I know that they need to explain why he sticks around for the rest of the series. I think he's proved his usefulness at this point.
Yeah, they don't even try and, like, cut the red wire or anything like that, do they? They just stand there. And
they make excuses for why they can't do any of that. They like say they can't disconnect a computer, can't do this, can't do that.
Yeah, one little one-liner explanations.
We're biased because we like this show. So.
Yeah, right?
That's fair.
So Casey and Sarah argue about who gets Chuck. Casey wants him in lockdown. Sarah wants to be more delicate. And Chuck just wants to go home. So he leaves and he spends the whole night at a beach watching the waters. Sarah approaches him, says she's been watching him all night. Chuck is wondering why Bryce chose him and asks, what happens now? Sarah says, for now, you go back to your life and they'll protect him and work with him. And he has to tell his family and friends nothing. So Sarah, back at her place, is looking at photos on her phone of her and Bryce. So yes, she and Bryce were in a relationship.
Oh no, love triangle.
Well, is it though? Because Bryce is dead.
Is he though? I mean, come on.
So Chuck puts in his application for assistant manager. We get some nice diegetic music from Morgan. well, what is assumed to be non-diegetic, but turns out to be diegetic music.
Yeah, we also get a little bit of physical intimidation and bullying from Harry.
Yeah, I was like, does the shoulder check really work when you don't hit their shoulder, but you just hit their arm instead? Because Harry Tang is much shorter.
Either way, it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, so Chuck is told to train the new guy. And it turns out the new green shirt, is Casey. So he's got a cover that'll let him keep an eye on Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees Sarah in the store as well, flashes on her ring, and he sees her killing a bunch of people.
Yeah, Sarah's the killer too, just in case you thought Casey was the bad guy.
All right, so did you have any spy fact versus spy fiction?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did.
All right, what do you got?
So Casey and where the stuff with Bryce takes place at the Directorate of National Intelligence. Now, that doesn't seem to be real, but there is a thing called the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
Which is what I said, isn't it?
Yeah. Their website is dni.gov.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it says the DNI serves as the head of the intel community, mm-hmm. a coalition of 17 agencies and organizations, including the ODNI, or the Office of the Director, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It works within the executive branch to independently and collaboratively gather and analyze the intel necessary to conduct foreign relations and national security activities. So it's kind of like the Intersect, but as an agency, not a tangible hard.
As I recall, DNI wasn't formed until after 9/11, right? So just like in real life, you know, they were told to play nice and combine all their, you know, intelligence.
According to DNI.gov, it was formed after 9/11, and it includes the National Counterterrorism Center, National mm-hmm. Counterintelligence and Security Center, and the National Counterproliferation Center, mm-hmm. and their hiring, if there's anyone out there who's interested in working there.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, that's all on DNI.gov. The other thing I had was the idea of NSA having agents.
Ah, yes. I feel like we've talked about this before, but we can always go over it again.
Yeah, so this was in XXX that we talked about.
That's right, yes.
So according to a ClearanceJobs.com article called Five Myths About the National Security Agency, everyone knows the NSA doesn't have agents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, wrong.
What?
Yes, according to ClearanceJobs, the agency does have men and women who work in the field.
Oh, okay.
They belong to the NSA Special Collections Service, which is a group of signals intelligence spies who work with the CIA abroad to penetrate foreign communications networks.
Interesting.
They say when a hard drive needs to be stolen, that assignment will probably go to the CIA's National Clandestine Service.
Yeah.
But things like plugging into embassies overseas, planting antennas to intercept communications, and using state-of-the-art technology in the field to acquire signals are almost certainly jobs for the SCS.
Wow. I am surprised and shocked that I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
And then finally, the general works for the Pacific Security League. That is fictional.
Okay. you have a source for that?
No. I just Googled it and nothing appeared.
All right. So I've got something from Wikipedia about Zork, text-based game. So it is a interactive fiction computer game. It was originally developed by four members of the MIT Dynamic Modeling Group between 1977 and 1979. It was directly inspired by the first text adventure game, Colossal Cave Adventure, written in 1975. It distinguished itself in its genre as an especially rich game in terms of both quality of storytelling, sophistication of its text parser, which was not limited to simple verb-noun commands like hit troll, but recognized some prepositions and conjunctions, such as hit the troll with the elvish sword, which was similar to what Chuck types in. Yeah, so that's what I got for spy fact versus fiction.
All right, now it's time for our favorite quotes. Carolyn, as our guest, would you like to go first?
Sure. I have three. I like the quote that Ellie gave to Chuck when he's getting ready for the date. And he said, "Aces, Charles, you're aces."
Aw.
And I guess that was something his dad used to say, which I thought that was sweet. And then when he's kind of complaining about Captain Awesome, which is what he calls Ellie's fiance, he says, "Everything he does is awesome. Climbing mountains, jumping out of planes, flossing."
And I didn't realize it's because he describes those things as awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, he uses the word awesome
a lot. Anytime someone says something, he says, "Awesome."
Yeah, that was more next episode that I noticed that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the last one was, while he's trying to defuse the bomb. Was it before or after? I can't remember. Casey says, "Don't puke on the C4.
Oh, yeah. It was after.
It was after, yeah. Mind if I go next?
by all means.
All right. Ahead. I like when after he shoots Bryce, Casey says, "Don't move." Vicky Vale is like, "It's from Batman." And Sarah says, "Because that makes it better." And I also like Sarah's very smooth, like, pickup line. She says, "I'm not sure it's able to receive calls because I never got one from you."
Yeah, that was good.
Skateboarders who are watching Chuck and Sarah go down the stairs backwards. And the nerd herder saying, "Computer emergency."
Yeah, they sound like the turtles from Finding Nemo.
Yeah. Two from Casey. "We're the good guys. We get paid to keep bombs from exploding."
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, "Box, and you're not an X-Man."
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that's when he's telling Chuck, "Don't screw this up, and you don't know what you're doing with the bomb." All right, what do you got?
Okay, just a couple. Casey says, "I'm going to Los Angeles." Perfect. I'm feeling a little pasty. And then when they're going home, and Chuck is talking to Morgan, and then he just pauses and says, "Why are you following me home?" That got a laugh out of me. All right, so now it's time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis, 1 being Avengers 1997, and 10 being even better than the pilot of Burn Notice. How would we rate the pilot of Chuck? I can go first.
All right, I'm very curious.
So I had a lot of complaints, but they really didn't hurt the show that much. I recognize that it's good, but it really did not knock my socks off.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it a reasonable 7 out of 10.
All right, that is reasonable. Carolyn, what rating do you give?
Well, I do like the show in general, but this wasn't one of my favorite episodes, so I'll say an 8.5.
That's still a very good
rating. Interesting. I'm wavering between a 7.5 and an 8. Like, I think it is a good pilot. It really does introduce a lot of the elements that will be there, sets up a lot of storylines that will happen in the future, and really lets us get to know who these characters are without saying, okay, we know all this about them. Why do we need to know more? So I think I'm going to go with that 8. Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike Burn Notice, it was willing to let some things lie and figure it out later. All right, so that was the pilot. Now it is on to our highest rated episode of first season. How did you pick it?
Because I think it's a good episode. And I think it's a good continuing of the storyline without where you didn't necessarily need to know everything in between.
Okay. The episode we're talking about is season 1, episode 10, Chuck versus the Nemesis. And the summary is Chuck talks to Bryce, who is alive and held in a CIA facility. Morgan has a girlfriend and brings her to Thanksgiving dinner at Ellie's. The nerd herd trains for crowd control on Black Friday.
All right, so before we start the episode in full, we get the recap where recap that Bryce is dead. And then Chuck found out about Bryce and Sarah that they were together. Chuck and Sarah at one point kissed. And we find out that Bryce is alive in a tube.
Yeah, so they really did not put off the will they or won't they with Chuck and Sarah, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They get together and break up in 9 episodes.
Well, so yes and no. So when he talks about them breaking up, that is the one thing I guess we need to explain here is that their cover was being boyfriend and girlfriend. They were never actually boyfriend and girlfriend, but then they did kiss in a moment they thought the world was going to end.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess the will they or won't they continues.
Yeah. So we see Bryce in a bed. He's restrained. He wakes up. Sarah and Casey are watching him through one-way glass. He apparently asks for Chuck. So Big Mike, who is the manager at the Bymore, is looking for Chuck. Apparently Chuck is hiding, trying to call Sarah to talk about the breakup and the kiss. He's regretting breaking up with her.
I was like, wow, a lot did happen while we were gone.
As he's talking to Morgan about this, he's pouring his heart out, and we pan over to see Morgan and his new girlfriend Anna, who was in the previous episode.
Yeah, his co-worker.
Yep.
What a great idea.
Yep. But yeah, they're clearly not listening because they're just busy making out. Morgan reveals he wants to bring Anna to Thanksgiving dinner, but Anna is apparently jealous that Morgan likes Ellie.
Question number one.
All right.
Why is he still working at Bymore?
Chuck?
Yes.
It's a good cover. No one expects a spy to be at Bymore.
But why not just have him work in an office or something where they can keep an eye on him?
Because it would raise questions about why he's doing that. Yeah.
The reason why is because I'm kind of amazed that he risks his life on a weekly basis, but his quality of life has not increased at all. He's still getting paid the same. He's still living with his sister. I assume he doesn't want to live with his sister. He just has to.
Yep.
So he's really kind of getting shafted here.
Yep.
Yeah, I've commented on that in the past too. I'm like, they need to give him a big raise. They're clearly not doing enough for him.
The CIA is really not worried about his quality of life. They are more concerned about keeping him as an asset.
Well, it becomes more problematic later, and we'll talk about it then.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. Big Mike is briefing the staff on Black Friday. All the nerd herders are off on nerd herd duty because no one will be coming in to fix computers. So they're put on crowd control.
So Morgan seems to be the boss now.
He is. Well, so in between, Harry Tang left, and there is no assistant manager. But Morgan has been around seemingly the longest in terms of the green shirts.
So what happened to Chuck's application to assistant manager?
It didn't happen. Spy stuff got in the way.
Oh, all right, good. As long as it's related to the larger story.
Yeah. We'll just say that. Here's a question for you, Zach. Have you ever worked Black Friday?
I've had some difficult jobs, but I have never had to work retail. And I'm very lucky about that.
I've worked retail. I've worked in what may be as bad or if not worse than working in electronics during Black Friday. I worked in a toy store.
Well, at least you got to make kids happy.
Except the kids aren't there on Black Friday. Just
the parents.
The very irrational parents who are trying to buy things, all the things that are going to sell out.
Yeah, did Arnold Schwarzenegger come through looking for Turbo Man?
Almost. I'm trying to remember what was the popular thing out there. Some sort of like hamster toy thing. That was the big thing that was that popular that year. Unlike Chuck, I didn't have to report the day before for training, but I did have to start basically at 11 p.m. Thanksgiving night and work until 7 a.m. Black Friday morning.
That is unfortunate. I hope you at least got paid well.
No.
Time and a half?
I think I got time and a half, but that's about it.
All right.
So this got me right here. I was like, oh.
So also in this part, was the guy Big Mike? He's explaining to everybody what Black Friday is. Like they've been living under a rock their whole lives.
As I've said often in the past, sometimes you just need to drop in these common sense lines just to make sure that everyone... I mean, hey, if you have younger viewers there who are watching, they might not know what Black Friday is and why it's a big deal.
I mean, yeah, you got to find out about Black Friday at some point.
I took it as though he was trying to psych him up and get him inspired and excited about Black Friday. There you
go. Oh, that's a good interpretation. Yeah.
Sarah comes into the store and Chuck starts rambling and Sarah says, we have to talk. And Chuck doesn't get the idea and just keeps rambling on about the kiss. And are we back together? And she finally shuts him up by saying, Bryce is alive.
The first thing everyone wants to know, including Chuck, is how is that possible? Mm-hmm. And it's never answered. I did like that the man wanted to talk about their relationship. That's a subversion of 2007 gender roles.
Mm-hmm. So Chuck is brought to the room where Bryce is. Bryce sees him, but doesn't believe it's him. Doesn't think it's the real Chuck. So how does he make him prove that he's really Chuck? Speaking Klingon.
It's kind of made me roll my eyes a little bit, but it's a reminder that, yes, you can look like Matt Bomer and still speak Klingon. It's possible. By the way, the fact that Matt Bomer's in the show really helped a lot. Matt Bomer's great. You can see him on Doom Patrol now, also on HBO Max.
As well as another show I loved, and I think it's mostly why he's not in Chuck as much, is he was in his own show.
White Collar?
White Collar, yes, which I loved that show. But yeah, so he tells Chuck answers in Klingon. He's kind of embarrassed about it because he doesn't want Sarah to see him speaking Klingon.
Right.
Bryce says his Klingon's a bit rusty. And Chuck asks, why did you bring me the Intersect? Well, they wanted. Who's they? And so he says, come here real close, which is the worst thing to do.
The they saved me is kind of like he went to Tahiti.
It's a magical place.
Did we know when Chuck and Bryce were in college, like what year that was?
They said you were in Stanford 5 years ago.
So 2002.
Unless he dropped out early.
Yeah.
And when did the Lord of the Rings movies come out?
Around this time, yeah.
Oh, you're wondering if it was made later, if they would be speaking Elvish instead?
Yeah. I was wondering if they would have also focused on Elvish because it's another big language.
That's a prettier sounding language, though.
I feel like Sarah would have been more impressed if he was speaking Elvish.
Yeah.
People learning Elvish is not as common as people learning Klingon.
I've dabbled in both.
Okay. So also around here, there's a credit of Matthew Bomer, which I like. Mm-hmm. Not Matt Bomer.
Yeah. Chuck gets taken, when he gets real close to Bryce, he gets taken at I labeled this as needlepoint, but that's not quite right.
Yeah, it's close enough.
The point of the syringe. Yeah, that sounds better than needlepoint.
How convenient that they just left it next to the dangerous killer.
Casey and Sarah come in. Bryce is surprised to see both of them. And we cut to our credits, or our title sequence, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the first time you've presumably seen that, Zach. Because they didn't have credits for the, or titles right. for the first. I enjoy these titles, and I love the theme song.
Okay, yeah, I didn't have any notes about it. This is fine.
So, Chuck and Bryce get into an elevator. Once the elevator closes, Bryce starts being all buddy-buddy with Chuck, saying, you knew I was never going to do that.
Chuck previously said he's definitely going to do it.
And so, the elevator stops before they want it to. And this is where we meet Tommy.
So, now I have questions. So, this creepy guy we learn is part of Hydra, or whatever, Fulcrum.
All right, well, hold on, let me...
No, that's not my point. Okay. My point is... Chuck is supposed to be undercover as himself, so yep. Why do you bring him to this CIA black site where he's meeting all these CIA people, including one of them that turns out to be dirty?
Because this was the only way they could get Bryce to talk, and that overrided any security concerns.
Well, they probably led him directly to the one room they were going to allow him to.
And so they didn't anticipate him, getting held at the point of a syringe to be a hostage and then go to another site where someone else will
as
find
them.
Down the elevator, yeah.
Chuck flashes on Tommy and we get basically this whole info dump on Fulcrum. It's a undercover spy ring. It's like Hydra or Spectre or any of those others. And I like those kind of things.
Yeah, I assume that they talked about it in other episodes that we just didn't see.
Nope, this is the first we hear of Fulcrum.
Oh, okay.
So you're not missing anything so far, is it?
Nice.
Close the elevator. Chuck asks, what's Fulcrum? And he's like, wait, you flashed? You absorbed the images? It worked? I knew it would work. And then injects Chuck, but not with a full dose. Chuck gets woken up by Sarah and Casey. Yeah, we find out it's not a full dose and it should be out of his system in a few hours. We find out that they're not going after Bryce because that's not their assignment. Their assignment is keep Chuck safe.
Yeah, I like how they're like, it's somebody else's problem now.
So Chuck continues to try to talk about the relationship, but before they actually get anywhere, Ellie interrupts and asks if Sarah's coming to Thanksgiving, which she said, yes, of course. So, the next day, Morgan is training the nerd herd on crowd control, and he brings up what to do if there is a complete emergency situation, a pineapple situation. It's an impossible event that'll change everything. You get a full buy more evacuation.
I didn't find the pineapple thing to be that funny, but this actually reminded me. I like the old phones, the flip phones.
Uh-huh.
But that reminded me of, the last episode. Sorry, yep. I forgot to mention this. But the bomb disarming scene, mm-hmm. Chuck takes a call from Morgan while he's disarming a bomb. That made me roll my eyes, too.
Okay,
it was really stupid.
But if not for that, they would never stop the bomb.
It's convenient writing, more of which we get in this episode, too.
Chuck gets a call from Ellie during this training session. Apparently she's in full-on Thanksgiving panic mode, so he's got to go by the store to pick up some stuff. Chuck gets home, and Casey is there in like a suit. Apparently yeah. Ellie invited him. Oh, yeah, so that's it. The other part of the cover is that Casey lives next door now.
It's like the mind kind of boggles. I did like that Ellie invited him. I guess she knows that they're like co-workers?
The co-workers and that he lives next
door,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had a top-secret government computer in the head of someone, you would post someone nearby so that they can, if something happens.
I don't know, but it would stand to reason that they would put him in a safe house under armed guard.
Which is exactly what Casey would want to do, but Sarah doesn't want that to happen to Chuck.
Yeah.
Chuck asked Casey about when Bryce previously said to him, care to try again? Because he's like, it sounds like you killed him. He's like, yes, I did. I was ordered to.
Yeah, you know who else was just ordered to, Casey?
Who?
The Nazis.
This is why I didn't say anything, because I knew he was just saying that.
Thank you, Carolyn, for being my speaker.
Oh, man.
yes.
Chuck tells Ellie that Morgan's bringing Anna, or Anna. I don't know why I keep saying Anna.
Mm.
Morgan, Anna, and Sarah arrive. Anna is very standoffish against Ellie.
Right.
At dinner, Morgan is enjoying the food very vocally.
He's practically orgasming over it, like in When Harry Met Sally.
Chuck goes to get the marshmallows from the car that he forgot for the
sweet potato casserole.
Yeah, that one. And he sees Bryce outside, who says he's not there to fight. And like Bryce asks, what happened to you? You could have been the next Bill Gates. So, but Yeah, it's because you got him kicked out of Stanford, so.
Everybody in this show wants to just talk about their feelings all the time. Bryce risked his life and his freedom just to make sure his friendship with Chuck was all patched up.
I mean, Chuck's a good guy and his good friend, and so he actually wants to... He knows that he screwed up his life, or... Well, maybe, I don't know if he does at this point.
I did like the duality of Bryce being the nemesis, but also a decent person.
Mm-hmm.
At least it seems that way.
Yeah. So Bryce says he really needs to talk to Sarah about Fulcrum and how, because they want Bryce, because they think Bryce is the Intersect.
Yes.
So Chuck goes back inside. Chuck tries to tell Sarah that Bryce is in his bedroom, or he like mouths it. So Sarah goes.
So do none of these characters have parents?
Like who?
Well, Chuck, Ellie, Sarah, Casey, Morgan.
We get to see some of their parents later.
Well, you guys mentioned parents, so I thought Chuck's parents had died, just like all great heroes.
We will know all of their parents at some point.
Except for, well, not Casey's parents.
Well, then I would ask why they're not spending Thanksgiving with them. But
there is good reasoning why.
They're like estranged or something. Yeah,
yes.
It's all good.
Put it as that. Leave it at that. Yeah. As Sarah goes inside Chuck's bedroom, she sees no one there. And then Bryce appears from, I don't know, was he like Spider-Maning on the ceiling? How was he doing?
I think so.
What was he hanging on to?
Right?
I have no idea. Yeah. Using the suction cups.
So Bryce says that he was not rogue. That it was all a mission. He kisses her. And Chuck goes back to the table, jealous.
Yeah, it's something out of a freaking soap opera.
So they're going around the table. Say what they're thankful for. Chuck, in a not very subtle code, tells Casey that Bryce is in the bedroom.
I did like that Casey has nothing to be thankful for.
Pass.
That's very him.
Yeah.
Bryce escapes before... anyone can get him. Back at the table, Anna's getting jealous about how much Morgan is enjoying the food and like throws a fit.
The way to a man's heart is through his stomach.
So as they're looking for Bryce, Sarah figures out that Chuck saw them kiss, but then they notice Bryce in Casey's apartment and they catch him. They have a Mexican standoff. He reveals more about Fulcrum. They're a special access group in the CIA that recruited him, or he realizes that it's an internal strike and that Fulcrum had plans for the Intersect and he didn't know who to trust. So he sent the email to Chuck. But why Chuck? Because he needed someone who didn't know about the CIA or Fulcrum and who he could be sure he could trust.
Yeah, and presumably someone who's a decent person.
Mm-hmm. And he also mentions a mission which makes Chuck flash on it, which can verify everything that was going on. Right about when they're, you know, all seemingly about to get along, Casey enters and shoots Bryce.
Yeah, and I was like, well, Bryce isn't going to die here. Is he immortal? Like, did they do some kind of...
He's a Highlander.
Yeah, they do some super science to him where he just grows back.
No, it turns out that Bryce was wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, there you go. So did Chuck faint? Because he gets up off the ground later.
Yeah.
I like that.
So Chuck asks how he's still alive from the first time he was shot, not this time.
Right.
Bryce says he's not sure, tells them what happened. After he got shot, he was brought back by a Fulcrum team.
Yeah, he says they probably used one of the European clinics. I like that. It's so mysterious.
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah, it's right up there with Tahiti.
So Fulcrum wanted to know where the Intersect files were. He tells them that he's the Intersect. Yeah, that's why they're chasing him. Bryce wants to turn himself in, but needs to know that he's getting handed off to the Rio CIA. So Chuck has the idea of, all right, you know, if I flash on them, they're Fulcrum. So if we see them at the handoff and I don't flash, they're okay.
That's a lot of trust in this magical mm-hmm. database.
Well, I actually liked it. It was good writing to help explain why Chuck still needs to be involved with mm-hmm. what's going on.
And they realize, all right, so we need to have a handoff somewhere public, lots of witnesses where this can all happen. And so they are going to have the handoff at the Bymore during Black Friday.
Oh my god, this is so stupid. I hated this part.
What?
Okay, I was under the impression they were trying to keep Chuck being a spy a secret. Yeah. So why would they bring, like, there's coworkers and people who know him. Like, you think eventually people who aren't supposed to know, like his coworkers, will figure out that Sarah, like, something's up with Sarah and something's up with Casey. Like, they could have done this literally anywhere else.
Somewhere that they could control the situation where they know that there's going to be a large amount of people.
Yeah, you could do a public park. And obviously they didn't have control over the situation because the situation gets out of control.
Fair enough. On Black Friday, the crowd is huge. Anna's still mad at Morgan. Sarah and Bryce enter the store. And as they do, Morgan sees Bryce and he's very suspicious, says that he looks very much like a guy that basically ruined his best friend's life.
Oh my God, who could have seen that coming? That if you put Bryce near someone who knows who Bryce is, that guy might recognize Bryce and then the whole thing goes up in smoke.
Except Bryce is supposed to be dead, so he's just very, that's why he doesn't actually make it a big deal.
But you could have had it literally anywhere else where there are no Morgans.
Did Morgan know Bryce?
That's a good question that I thought of while we were watching this. I don't know that he did.
Because they were off at college.
Yeah, so Morgan, I think, you know, was friends with Chuck from, you know, childhood. And then he went away. And so he may have like seen pictures of Bryce, but never actually met Bryce. And probably vice versa.
Morgan is totally the type to Facebook stalk Chuck all the time. You probably saw some Facebook pictures of them together. There you go.
Facebook didn't exist in 2002.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That's true.
Not till 2004.
Well, you see Matt Bomer once, you're going to remember that beautiful man face. Also, something else I wanted to point out was that Anna says to Morgan, I was just testing you and you failed. I may not know much about relationships, but I know that's a red flag.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Don't do that.
Yep.
I think that's a good call.
So the CIA pickup arrives. Chuck does his pass, doesn't flash on them, so they're legit.
I also like there's a shot that shows Call of Duty 4 for sale.
Flashback.
Classic game. Now a classic game. Mm-hmm.
Jeff and Lester are hiding underneath the nerd herd desk. So this is where we find out apparently the registers are down, but Jeff needs to fix them because he's the only one who knows how they work because they're from the 80s.
Yep.
And Morgan, you know, does a rallying cry, gets him to actually get out and actually go to fix try to fix the registers. Before he gets handed off, Chuck and Bryce have a talk. He apologizes. Chuck says that, you know, he has one friend in the world, basically, whereas Chuck has, you know, lots of friends and a seemingly a good life.
Yeah, Chuck has so many friends. He's not socially awkward at all. I'm not getting over it.
I don't know what reaction you're going to expect from me about this.
Strong agreement.
Nope, it's not going to happen. Anyway, so Bryce thanks Chuck for everything. Sarah is going to take Bryce in. So Sarah and Bryce are riding in the car with the CIA agents, and Bryce tries to get Sarah to come with him. They're about to kiss when they get hit by a truck.
Again, that keeps happening.
As that's happening, Tommy from Fulcrum finds Chuck in the Bymore, says, you know, I'm looking for a computer. You may have heard of it. It's called the Intersect.
Yeah, he also calls him Charles, which I thought was funny.
Sarah and Bryce are being lifted out of the car. Tommy reveals he has men in the store. They've neutralized Casey. And Tommy says he has no compunctions about killing everyone in the store if he has to.
Wow. And now all of his friends and coworkers are in danger. Who could have predicted that would have happened? Well, yeah, me.
So Sarah and Bryce wake up and take out their guards. Or maybe they're playing possum for part of that. But yeah, so they take out the guards and take the car that was about to take them away to find Chuck. Tommy has Chuck under his control, and as they're leaving, Jeff comes up and says, tells him the register's down, what do I do? Tommy says, say more than one word and I'll kill you both. So he sells Jeff pineapple.
This was pretty good writing. It reminded me of the Doctor Who where he has four questions, or he has one question to save his own life.
So Jeff goes to tell Morgan pineapple, which, you know, Morgan doesn't believe and says, no, Chuck told me that. He says, all right, I'm going to evacuate the store. So he pulls the fire alarms, gets his big megaphone out, tells everyone to leave the store. There's a big stampede. Big Mike hears this happening, tries to stop people, saying, no, it's a mistake. Everything's fine. You got to stay.
Yeah, this seems dangerous.
Trampled. Yeah. Anna is about to get trampled, but Morgan saves her and is carrying her out of the store. So basically now all the only people left are all the spies. Chuck and Casey go into the entertainment center where there is apparently a big stash of guns if you press a button underneath the table.
Yeah, that was great. And then they have an A-team shootout.
Yep. So there's a big shootout.
No one gets hit.
Nope. Sarah and Bryce arrive, and Sarah and Bryce have this really good synchronized fight. Like, I was admiring a lot of their kicks. Those were good kicks.
Kicking impossible.
In the action of all of this, Tommy gets a hold of Chuck.
I do like how Chuck keeps getting taken hostage. Yep. That's funny.
Yep. Bryce and Sarah have a Mexican standoff with Tommy, and Bryce asks him something in Klingon. When Chuck responds, Bryce shoots Chuck and then Tommy.
Yeah, did you like this? I don't know if it was an intentional callback to Speed.
Oh,
do you remember that part in Speed where he shoots the hostage? Yeah.
No, I didn't see it as such, but yeah, I see it. And Chuck wakes up and reveals that what Bryce had asked him was, are you wearing a vest?
Finally, someone on this show makes a smart decision.
I'm just glad he interpreted it correctly, because what if he was just wearing like a normal vest and it wasn't a bulletproof vest? Things could have gone very wrong.
Good point, Caroline.
The NSA backup / cleanup team comes in. They're all disguised as firemen. Anna is now no longer mad at Morgan because he passed this test. Again, yes, red flag.
I like the firefighters with guns. I thought that was a cool duality.
Yeah. Big Mike is mad at Morgan because he thinks he ruined Black Friday, the biggest day of the year for them. But then, of course, in perfect timing, one of the firemen comes up to tell Big Mike that there was a gas leak in the store, and whoever sounded the alarm probably saved a ton of lives.
Wow, what a nice NSA bro. All
right. So Bryce is in the entertainment center giving a report to General Beckman, and then comes out wearing a tux. He's got a new mission. He's going after Fulcrum on his own, off the radar.
So I guess everything's like cool.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he go rogue and the NSA tried to kill him?
It was like Tom Cruise in every Mission Impossible. He went rogue, but for a good reason, and it was justified, and it was actually a secret mission.
So it all got cleared up.
Got cleared.
Now Bryce Larkin is dead and he'll stay that way. And then he tells Sarah, we'll always have Omaha. So later that night, Chuck knocks on Casey's door, invites him to have some leftovers from Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving leftovers, so good.
Made me like crave turkey. I was like, oh, I wanted like a turkey sandwich. Like I could make, just like the.
So have I ever told you guys about the Thanksgiving leftover waffles?
No.
So this is something my family does. You take a normal waffle iron, okay? And you spray it down with cooking oil or whatever.
Okay.
You can do it with mashed potatoes or stuffing.
Uh-huh.
Maybe something else. Basically, you take like mashed potatoes and you put it in the waffle maker and you make a waffle out of it. And then you eat mashed potato waffle. And
interesting.
It's good.
All right.
I would eat that. That sounds great.
Yeah. My go-to like Thanksgiving sandwich, if you have leftovers, is basically the entire meal in a sandwich. So your mashed potatoes, your gravy, your stuffing, your
turkey and cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
I'm not so big on cranberry sauce, but everything besides that. I know. There's a one of my previous jobs when I worked at a sandwich shop where they had a holiday turkey sandwich, which was always came around Thanksgiving. It's always the best. Yeah, anyways, back to this episode.
Anyways,
Thanksgiving tangent.
So Chuck asks Casey about Omaha. Like, why would he say that specific wording? And Casey says, probably a code, you know, some sort of prearranged contact point if Sarah wants to join up with him, because he's going dark, and so if she's going to join, he's got to do it now. And we cut to Sarah in her place, trying to decide what to do. Looks like her bag's packed. Bryce is calling her on the landline, as Chuck is calling on her cell. And we see her not knowing who to answer.
Get it? Do you get it?
With that, our episode ends.
I did like how there's a fade-out of both the phones going. I bet that's the McGee influence, because they do that on the X-Files, too. Yeah.
All right. So, do you have any spy fact versus spy fiction here?
Yes, I have one quick thing for spy fact versus fiction.
All right.
I Googled the phrase internal strike.
Okay.
Or internal strike spy, and nothing seems to show up, so I guess it's not a thing.
Okay.
But then on history.com, what's the real history of Black Friday? Because I was like... Did people not know what it was in 2007?
All right.
So back in the 1950s, police in the city of Philadelphia used the term to describe the chaos that ensued on the day after Thanksgiving, when hordes of suburban shoppers and tourists flooded the city in advance of the big Army-Navy football game held on that Saturday every year. Not only would Philly cops not be able to take the day off, they'd have to work extra long dealing with the additional crowds and traffic. By 1961, Black Friday had become a thing in Philadelphia, even though the city's merchants tried to change it to Big Friday in order to remove the negative connotations. The term didn't spread to the rest of the country until much later. As recently as 1985, it wasn't in common use nationwide, but then the 80s is when retailers found a way to reinvent Black Friday, turn it into something positive, and that's the red to black, where they go from the red into the black, when they finally turn a profit. That's that's where that originates. So someone just made up that explanation, in other words.
I was going to say that I'm now Googling where to get Thanksgiving sandwiches in this area. Ooh.
Let us know. Post it on social media.
I've got a few things from Wikipedia. A bulletproof vest, also known as a ballistic vest or a bullet resistance vest, is an item of body armor that helps absorb the impact or and reduce or stop penetration to the torso from a firearm, fired projectiles, and fragmentation from explosions.
Okay.
A couple different types, both hard and soft armor. It looks like the one that they were wearing is soft armor, which is usually made of woven fabric, synthetic or natural, and protects up to a NIJ level I don't know what that means. All right. Can be worn in combined with hard armor as part of an injunction armor system. Interesting. Yeah, so I know that it is also very true, like they stand here, that, yeah, even though it's bulletproof, it still hurts.
Well, it makes me wonder if it's less effective the closer the guy with the gun is, because that bomber was standing close, so.
Yep, yep. I don't know. That probably is a thing, but I don't know enough about it. Okay, lastly, I have the Klingon language. This is from Wikipedia. The Klingon language is the constructed language spoken by a fictional alien race, the Klingons, in the Star Trek universe. Described in the 1985 book, The Klingon Dictionary, by Mark Okrand, who created the language, it was deliberately designed to sound alien. It has a number of typologically, thank you, uncommon features. The language's basic sound was devised, along with a few words, was devised by actor James Doohan for Star Trek the Motion Picture. Now, I went on the Klingon Wikipedia, which is Klingon.wiki, and to see what they actually say in Chuck.
Going the extra mile, we appreciate that.
So, in the first scene, it says, Klingon hol, dajat la, which means, do you speak Klingon? And Chuck responds, hija, biptiv kala, which is, yes, apparently you are healthy again. So
oh, nice, a little extra there.
Yeah, but, so you... Here's the one that I was really wondering about, because I was like, is there a word for vest or bulletproof vest in Klingon? The jacket of shield has. Yes, no.
So he did say.
Hey, like, are you wearing a shielded thing? Yeah.
I thought he was going to say, like, do you have your shields up?
And Chuck responds, hija, which is yes. And according to Klingon.wiki, the sentences are not grammatically entirely correct. The pronunciation is not perfect, but fine.
I'm glad they gave us a rating, yes.
And apparently Mark Okrand has confirmed that he did not do the translation and actually does not know who did them.
So I saw a news report a while ago about this guy who raised his daughter to be bilingual. And
one of them was Klingon.
You saw this?
No, but I just had a guess.
So they have an interview with this like 14-year-old girl, and she's like, yeah, I speak Klingon. I don't like Star Trek. It doesn't seem too happy about
it.
Man. Could have done other things with her childhood. You never know. It could come in handy.
They say that if you learn one language, learning more languages is easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
That's very true. And learning other languages helps you learn English grammar as well.
Although Klingon grammar is kind of weird.
Yeah, but just like comparing the parts, I assume.
This is true. Yeah. I appreciated this part because as someone who dabbled in Klingon, I was like, you know what? I like that. All right, they're showing off. And not just like they actually did most of the work in terms of getting them to speak the Klingon. Like the other shows I've seen where like they try to have them speak Klingon and it's clearly not Klingon. They just made up some, hard sounds that sounded Klingon-ish. But that's what I have for Spy Fact versus Spy Fiction.
All right, now it's time for our favorite quotes. Carolyn, would you like to go first again?
Sure, I would love to. Let's see. One of them, when they meet the Fulcrum agent, Bryce is threatening to kill Chuck, and Tommy says, I wouldn't want you to kill some random person. I just feel terrible.
Nice bad guy line.
And then when Chuck is at Thanksgiving, and everyone says what they're thankful for, Chuck's is, I'm thankful that Bryce Larkin is dead and not currently in my room making out with my girlfriend.
Wow, girlfriend, that's a little presumptuous of you, Chuck.
Wow.
I guess they hadn't told anyone else that they had broken up. And that's how Casey finds out that Bryce is there. So that's funny. Right. And then the last one I have, during Black Friday, when Jeff is hiding under the desks and the registers are down, he says, "Jeff, the registers are down. You're the only one that can fix them. You're scared. I'm scared. We're all scared. But if they can't check out, they can't leave. And if people can't leave, more people will come in. And if more people come in, the store will explode. The store will explode."
Right. I've got from Big Mike, "Black Friday, when regular housewives transform into a crazy mob, blinded by door prizes, sales, and the urge to get the Christmas shopping done early." Which, you know, having worked Black Friday, gets me right here.
PTSD flashback.
Chuck. "Sarah and Casey are right inside. One girlish scream from me and they'll go into combat mode."
I like that one too.
And from Chuck. "Seriously, it's not fair to not tell someone how much a bulletproof vest still hurts."
I'm sure you can imagine, Chuck. You think 8 episodes of spy action would have toughened him up a little bit.
Yeah, no. He's still Chuck.
So in the beginning, someone says, "You know what happens after Thanksgiving?" And someone else says, "The tryptophan wears off and the liquor kicks in."
That's Jeff, yes.
Yeah. Chuck is talking about Thanksgiving, but he doesn't have time to talk about it. So he just says, "Just remember, it's not my fault." Very nice. Someone says, "No guns at Thanksgiving." In the same part where it says, "You're the only guy who knows how to touch the, knows how to use the registers," someone else says, "Ah, someone touched me." And then finally, towards the end, when it looks like Sarah's going to leave, somebody says, "We'll get you a new girl," which was so cold-blooded. It seemed like the kind of thing that like a bad guy would say, or Sean Connery, James Bond. All right, so now it's time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis. You know the drill at this point. 1 being Avengers 97, 10 being better than Burn Notice. How would we rate Chuck versus the Nemesis? Someone else go first this time.
Did I go first last time?
No, I did.
You did not.
Oh, okay. I will give it an 8. Mm-hmm. So slightly less than the pilot, but I thought it was enjoyable.
All right. I'll go next. So I'm going to give this a 9 because I really like this episode. I like they're building the mythology of the show more. They're introducing Fulcrum, which becomes a much bigger part later on. You also get the return of Bryce, which I like. You know, it was a nice kind of dangling thread from the beginning. And I get, you see him as a character and also see how good a spy team he and Sarah were. Like, I really liked the action and the martial arts in their scenes. I thought it was really good. And I just, yeah, I really like this episode. And I love the Klingon in there too.
Good. I'm glad that you liked it. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. I like Matt Ballmer.
Uh-huh.
But I don't care about the Nerd Crew people. And I don't like to spend so much time with them. All the love triangles is like, are you just shitting me? There's so many love triangles. A lot of stupid writing decisions, like having the big confrontation be at the buy more. That being said, like, it's still perfectly enjoyable, but I didn't like it as much as the pilot. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Interesting. All right.
Love triangles. I also like how they don't just give all, there's a lot of good mysteries and they don't just give it all away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they keep you hooked. That's mm-hmm. good. But they also don't drag the mysteries out forever.
Yeah, not like a CW show.
Oh, God.
Wait, now I need to count how many love triangles there are.
Well, we've got
Chuck, Sarah, and Bryce.
Yeah.
Morgan, Ellie, and Anna.
Yeah.
Right. Is that really a love triangle, though, if Ellie really doesn't like him?
Like a one-sided
love triangle. I assumed you were counting that.
No, you're right. I did. I totally did.
Is that it? Is there any more?
That's all.
Okay.
But 2 is too many. Yeah. 2 is too many. There should be 0.
But they're complicated. Mm-hmm. It's more interesting.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for Chuck, Carolyn. Is there anything you would like to plug before we get out of here? I believe you have an Instagram about a certain dog.
Oh, yes. Yes. I think I would. Yeah, I'll plug. So we have a pup named Daisy Sky, and she has an Instagram named Daisy Sky the Doodle, mm-hmm. Where you can keep up on her antics and cuteness.
Very nice.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us for our episode on Chuck, one of my favorite shows out there, favorite spy shows out there. You can find us on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And until next time, I've been Christian.
And I'm Zach.
And we are The Spy-Fi Guys, signing off. Thank you for listening to The Spy-Fi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.